Welcome to the Commune Podcast. My name is Jeff Krasnow. Today, I am thrilled to announce a new series here on the podcast with the extraordinary doctor and metabolic health expert, Dr. Casey Means. Now, Casey has been instrumental in my journey back from metabolic dysfunction, and she and her brother Callie are authors of the fantastic new book, Good Energy. And that's the focus here of the series, to explore ways to generate good energy. So in today's conversation, Casey explains the fundamental process of energy production in the body, highlighting the role of the mitochondria in converting food into cellular energy. To learn even more about Dr. Casey Means, check out her new Commune course, Optimize Your Metabolism, for simple, science-backed steps to generate good energy and feel your best. Now, you can watch the first 4 days of the course for free at onecommune.com/metabolism. And if you're interested in learning about the protocols and benefits of practices like fasting, cold and heat therapy, light therapy, resistance training, and meditation and breath work, well, check out my new Commune course titled Good Stress. In this program, I distill all of the conversations I've had here on the podcast into 10 specific protocols that helped me lose 50 pounds, reverse my prediabetes, and create an upward health spiral in my life. You can get the first 5 days for free at onecommune.com/goodstress. So without further delay, I present to you the ever energetic Casey Means.
Dr. Casey Means, my good friend, what a treat.
Jeff, I'm so happy to be here.
You are such a bright light in my life and in so many people's lives, but I'll claim you for a moment and just be like, you have, God, meant so much to my personal journey, my health journey, and you've become just such a good friend. I've met so many fascinating and interesting people through you. And you're so generous with your connections. So thank you for being here. And there's so much reason to celebrate. Well, today, even though this will air in the future, your Commune course at long last has actually launched.
Optimizing your metabolism.
There you go. And you have optimized mine. And this is just amazing. This course is just, it's so articulate. You just have a way of breaking down these concepts with both sophistication, but making them so easily accessible to people. It's really amazing.
Thank you, Jeff.
And then right around the corner is this pièce de résistance, Good Energy. Good Energy is not only the title of the book, it's your pseudonym. It's the title of the author. You are Good Energy. And I've done my best. This is the most colorful shirt I actually own.
I love it.
You said, I'm coming over with a great outfit like you always do. And this is the best I could do.
Oh, my gosh. And an amazing organization that we love. Kiss the Ground.
Absolutely.
Yes.
Yes. We both went to the Common Ground film.
Yeah.
Featuring that amazing farmer, Gabe.
Yes.
Yeah.
I feel like my book could probably be summed up in that phrase, kiss the ground.
Kiss the ground.
Yeah. That's the solution.
So let's get into it because, you know, we're going to talk about good energy, how we make good energy, how we can go off the rails from good energy, how good energy is essentially upstream from so many different conditions and pathologies. But I think it's really important to lay some foundational work here and just talk about energy more generally and how the body makes energy. So how does that happen? How does this organism make energy?
Oh my gosh. It's a miraculous process. So the most foundational thing that our bodies do is make energy because we're a big machine. We're a machine of 40 trillion plus cells, and every single one of those cells needs cellular energy to function. They're like 40 trillion little cities, machines, factories, and each one of those cells every second is doing trillions of chemical reactions, and we need cellular energy to pay for all of those chemical reactions. Mm. And why does that matter? Because the bubbling up of all those chemical reactions is our lives. That's what it is. That's who we are. And so we want that process to be working well of generating that currency that powers the trillions of reactions that make up our life. And so how do we do that? Well, we convert the 70 metric tons of food that we take into our body in our lifetimes, and we convert that potential energy, that material that has the potential to power us, and we channel it through our mitochondria inside our cells, and we make that cellular energy. So that's really what people need to know about metabolism. It is the conversion of food energy to cellular energy to power every chemical reaction in our body to create our lives. Unfortunately, in 93% of American adults today, that precious conversion process is broken in some way. It's not working as well as it could. And that's called metabolic dysfunction, mitochondrial dysfunction. And the reason that is happening and has been happening very uniquely in the past 50 to 100 years is because the rapid industrialization of our world across so many different areas of our environment, our food system, the chemicals and synthetic chemicals that are just all throughout our world now, our digital world, so many aspects of our modern industrial technological life are uniquely and synergistically damaging the mitochondria, this precious part of our cells that does that flow of energy from food to human currency. And so we have a mismatch between our environment and our cells that I know we're going to talk about more, but it's fascinating that so many aspects of our modern lifestyle across food, sleep, stress, movement, toxins, light, and temperature all astonishingly impact the mitochondria. Hmm. So that's how we make energy. It's a flow through the mitochondria and sort of a bit of a preview into what the problem is. I think in writing the book and in meditating on this idea so much over the past several years, I think big picture, the other thing you can really think about mitochondria that really brings it alive to me is that ultimately what we're doing is that food energy is going to be broken down often into glucose, and that glucose gets broken down, and that's what really is going through the mitochondria to create ATP. And what's so cool to realize is that where does that glucose come from? It comes from the reaction of sunlight with the chloroplasts in plants to create glucose and oxygen. And we also need the oxygen to make the mitochondria work. So chloroplasts in plants, incredibly, are very similar in structure to human mitochondria. They also have similar machinery inside. And so aside from the clinical perspective of metabolism, what's really happening is that we are taking the downstream products of plants taking up sunlight photon energy that has traveled 92 million miles through space. We're taking the products that's created from that in a plant, and we are liberating the sun's energy by breaking those glucose bonds in our bodies to create a currency of energy that powers every thought, feeling, business venture, movement, every single thing we do, every hug, every kiss, everything. So metabolism is the liberation of potential cosmic energy through our bodies to power our lives. It's miraculous, it's beautiful, and it's breaking. And so my purpose on this planet is to help spread that awareness and help people realize that in making healthy decisions, we are not only improving our metabolic health, we are truly improving our capacity to be magical transformers of cosmic energy to reach our highest purpose.
Mm, so great. And I love the wonder and awe that you bring to the equation here, because we will get into some of the more clinical pathologies of bad energy, for example. But yeah, there is this kind of, the process of creating energy is a reflection of this cosmic intelligence that's the product of billions and billions of years of iteration. And, you know, like you said, the chloroplast and our mitochondria, they essentially go back to being, you know, 2 billion years ago, like cyanobacteria floating on top of the ocean. And then eventually a bacteria got engulfed by an archaea, but didn't quite get consumed by it. In that tryst formed these mitochondria that for the first time ever could use oxygen, essentially aerobic respiration, to make energy. And that is what informed complex life.
Yes.
And that we're a product, we're a chain in, or a link in that evolutionary chain. It's just like amazing.
Yeah.
And like you say, we're unlocking this fossilized or chemical sunlight in our bodies to be here and to be present with each other and have this conversation, and everyone's listening to this is also sharing that.
Yeah.
That same phenomena. It's just incredible.
Hey, it's Jeff, and my goal is to remain as energized and vibrant as long as I possibly can. And candidly, now I'm 53, and I've never felt better. But for optimal health, it's critically important that my body makes good energy. And that is why I use Timeline's MitoPure. Our mitochondria are the power plants of our body, and MitoPure takes care of my mitochondria like nothing else. Daily damage to our mitochondria is simply unavoidable, but for the first time, there is a supplement that has the power to repair this damage. So when taken daily, MitoPure renews your mitochondria, increasing cellular energy and the subjective feeling of vibrancy. The results? Well, studies found participants saw muscle strength and endurance increase without any changes to diet or exercise routines, although we should exercise. Now, I can tell you, I've personally felt the difference in my life. MitoPure is a one-of-a-kind, backed-by-science supplement that I trust. It does what no other supplement can. I'm really just impressed by their commitment to high-quality research, and I've been sharing it with those that I love, and I recommend you try it for yourself. So right now, Timeline is offering the Commune community 10% off your first order at www.timeline.com/commune. That's 10% off your first order at timeline.com/commune.
So we're heterotrophs, obviously. We're not autotrophs like the plants. So we can't photosynthesize. To get the substrates that we use to make energy, we have to either eat the plants that have been able to avail themselves of photosynthesis, or eat the animals that ate the plants. Mm-hmm. So what are the primary substrates that we use, or that our mitochondria uses, to essentially convert into ATP, into that currency?
The two main ones that we use are fatty acids and glucose. So if you think about our diet, you know, we're taking in protein and fat and carbohydrates as our macronutrients, and the fat obviously turn into fatty acids, and the carbohydrates are going to break down into glucose, and then protein can also be converted into glucose essentially to process. And so once you get down to the level of the cell, these actually turn into the same thing. We're talking about things like pyruvate and acetyl-CoA, and those are going to go into the same cycle in the mitochondria to actually produce our ATP. So it's different ways of getting to these raw products that ultimately will be taken into the mitochondria to make the ATP.
Mm-hmm. And so when we're making good energy, when everything's working there at the mitochondrial level, it's uptaking glucose and fatty acids. It's pretty flexible and it can shift between the two. And then it's making like a certain amount of ATP. I think I've read like, you know, 34 units of ATP per molecule of glucose or something like that.
Yeah.
So that's when it's like functioning well, right? And so how does that work? Like you eat something with carbs in it, it gets absorbed through your small intestine into your bloodstream. How does it get into the cell? And can you explain some of that mechanism?
Yeah, absolutely. So in the case of carbohydrates, you're going to be eating the sugar or the grains or anything that has carbohydrates in it. It's going to be digested. There's, you know, little protein enzymes on the, intestinal cells that are going to break down the sugars, and they're going to absorb through the cells and through the intestinal lining cells and then into the bloodstream. And then there's going to be a rise essentially in the glucose, the sugar in the bloodstream. And that's going to signal to the body that we want to take the glucose out of the bloodstream and use it. We keep the sugar in the bloodstream at a very like narrow level for homeostasis. So if it's high, the body immediately tries to do something with it. And what it does is it releases a hormone from the pancreas called insulin. And that insulin is also floating around the bloodstream. And the insulin actually binds to insulin receptors on essentially almost every cell in the body can take up glucose. And when the insulin binds, it's a signal to the cell that there's glucose around. And then it brings glucose channels from inside the cell to the cell membrane to allow the glucose to come in. This is very dynamic. Like these are glucose channels called, you know, GLUT channels that are often sitting in like little bags in the side of the cells called vesicles. And upon the stimulation of insulin, they are ferried out to the cell membrane and let the glucose in. It's so cool. So then once the glucose is inside the cell, ideally there's a good approximate match between, you know, your energy needs and what's coming in, and it will be broken down and then flow into the mitochondria to make ATP that we use for energy. And then unfortunately what happens when our mitochondria aren't working properly is that that process of that flow through the mitochondria and ATP, it's going to be slowed essentially. It's going to be dysfunctional. There's going to be less capacity to process what came in through digestion into the cell into ATP. And so now you've got a situation where there's too much coming in and not enough capacity to process it. So the body in its eternal wisdom will obviously try to get less glucose to come into the cell because it can't process it. Yeah. So why would you want more coming in? Because you can't just stuff this bag of the cell filled with something it can't process. Problems will occur then. So the cell actually says, insulin, we actually can't respond to your signal anymore. No more glucose can come in. The in is closed. And that is called insulin resistance. Mm-hmm. And that is the cell in its wisdom protecting itself because the mitochondria unfortunately doesn't have capacity. And so what then happens is the glucose stays outside the cell and it rises in the bloodstream. And of course, that's what most overtly what you might see as prediabetes or type 2 diabetes, the two conditions that we think of most connected to blood sugar, which astonishingly, 50% of American adults now have a diagnosis of type 2 diabetes or prediabetes. And The biggest blind spot, I think, in all of healthcare is not realizing that fundamentally those diseases, you know, with these little clinical names, really what's happening is it's just a reflection of the body protecting itself from the cells being inundated with glucose that they can no longer process because of that hurt mitochondria. So Anything we do to treat these diseases that doesn't focus on increasing the capacity of the mitochondria will unfortunately fall short. And this is, of course, why the more we literally spend on healthcare and on treating things like type 2 diabetes and prediabetes with these more reactionary, quote unquote, treatments that may make blood sugar look lower, but don't really do anything to improve mitochondrial capacity, We're spending more, we're treating more, and the rates of the diseases are actually going up. So obviously We're focusing not quite on the right problem. So that's sort of the spectrum of how we digest and take up glucose and then what happens when that process isn't going well.
Yeah, so good. I mean, not to divert us at all, but recently there was a cap put on like insulin, right? And everyone was like, oh, great. You know, we're not going to get gouged on insulin. You know, I'm talking about exogenous insulin. And, you know, in my mind, I'm like, yeah, that's great, but we're not addressing the actual root cause of the issue. You know, we're not actually addressing the inputs, dietary and other kind of lifestyle conditions that we'll unpack in other episodes. And we're just, you know, essentially treating the high concentration of glucose in the bloodstream instead of actually addressing the root cause of like, what's going on there. And it is amazing, like what you say, the body is just so incredibly wise. So the shutting of the door at the cellular level, right, is adaptive.
Yeah.
You know, because if too much glucose is getting in the cell, it's going to be, you're going to have all sorts of issues with ROS and with the production of like free radicals and, yeah. and all this other kind of stuff. So it keeps it in the bloodstream. That's actually adaptive.
Yeah.
But then when there's too much blood or too much glucose in the bloodstream, that causes some issues. Maybe we will unpack some of that in another discussion for sure, but maybe just give us kind of the highlights, like what happens when there's too much glucose in the bloodstream.
Yeah. Because the body wants to keep glucose at a very narrow physiologic level, when it's too high, that is a signal to the body that something's not quite right. When the blood sugar is consistently too high, there's three main things that can happen. The first is that that can independently trigger inflammation. Again, it's unusual. And anything that's unusual in the body can really trigger the immune system. The immune system's our army. It will respond to any threat, psychological, physical, biologic, it's ready. And so high blood sugar, in a sense, a perturbation, a threat. And so inflammation rises. The second thing is that high blood sugar concentration, because there's literally just more floating around, it's going to stick to things. It's literally just going to form little chemical bonds with things that it floats around and sees, like cell membranes and like the lining yeah. of our blood vessels and yeah. our collagen and our right. skin.
Hemoglobin.
Yeah. So people may have gotten a hemoglobin A1C test from their doctor's office, and this is literally measuring glycated hemoglobin. And the reason why it's a helpful marker of average glucose levels is because if your percentage of hemoglobin that is glycated is higher, it's a sign that there's a higher concentration of sugar in the bloodstream. So that's why that lab marker comes back as a percentage. Then the third thing it's going to do is what you alluded to, generate oxidative stress. So when the body is sort of tasked metabolically, especially when the machinery isn't working properly, it's like any machine that's like overworked and under maintenance and damaged, there's sort of like exhaust and sort of like damaging byproducts that might be released. I think of like a big smoke tower, just like releasing like big gray smoke. That's kind of like oxidative stress.
Stop talking about Skylar.
not that. We love that, Skylar.
Just teasing.
And so that's oxidative stress. And it's interesting that hyperglycemia, glucose, is a very strong contributor to oxidative stress. And we don't want that, because it's essentially just like reactive damaging molecules floating around our cells and bodies the reason they're reactive is because they have an unpaired electron. And that unpaired electron, which is negatively charged, like wants to bind with anything that can neutralize it and make it neutrally charged. So it will literally just bind with DNA, with proteins, with fats, and to neutralize itself. And in doing so, that creates problems and generates more inflammation, because you don't want these random, you know, charged molecules just bind with things. That, again, is a threat signal to the body. So hyperglycemia, high blood sugar, leads to chronic inflammation, reactive oxygen species, and glycation, all of which create dysfunction in the body. So in the body's beautiful attempt to protect the inside of the cells with insulin resistance, it creates the insulin resistance to protect the inside of the cell from being overloaded with the substrate it cannot process because of mitochondrial dysfunction. It gets this unfortunate collateral damage of hyperglycemia, which independently creates problems. And then you spoke about exogenous insulin, which is just, of course, extreme, like life-saving, and actually 100% critical in people with type 1 diabetes who can't make insulin. But for in people with type 2 diabetes or prediabetes who are insulin resistant more because of, you know, mitochondrial dysfunction, what the insulin is doing is it's kind of adding fuel to the fire of insulin resistance. It is overloading the cells with the signal to shove more glucose inside. But because we haven't fixed the mitochondrial capacity, it's literally just pushing more glucose in, but not change. So what it does is it almost, you know, late stage people with type 2 diabetes who are on insulin, it's not conferring necessarily a large protection from cardiovascular risk or other metabolic sequelae, because again, it's not actually healing the cells. It's hiding glucose from the bloodstream.
Yeah. And then insulin resistance at times is actually adaptive. Right. So really what fat is a sort of repository for energy, it's warehoused energy, right? So how does the body kind of shuttle excess glucose into fat? Because that's another potential destination, right?
Yeah, exactly. So when that excess glucose is floating around in the bloodstream, doing unfortunately its own damage with chronic inflammation, reactive oxygen species, oxidative stress, and glycation, the body again, in its wisdom, is like, there's too much in the bloodstream. We've got to store some of this somewhere. So something that the body can do with the glucose is actually package it, convert it to fat, and then store it in a few places. It can store it in fat cells. It can also store it inside of cells. And so you get excess glucose showing up in the body as both the deposition of fat throughout the body, which is of course how it's related to our overweight and obesity crisis, but also many people with insulin resistance and high blood sugar have high triglyceride levels because that is another form of, you know, glucose being converted into a fat form that is then floating around the bloodstream. So you will often see high triglycerides paired with high glucose. And I've seen several lab results of patients and people who actually will have high triglyceride levels before their glucose actually gets into a pathologic range, because a lot of that's getting converted to triglycerides, which will be quite high early. But the body, they're still on that progression towards glucose actually going up into a pre-diabetic range. So people should take their triglyceride levels incredibly seriously, because it can be an early sign that there's overwhelm in the body from excess carbohydrates and from mitochondrial dysfunction. And then when the mitochondria can't shuttle that glucose through into ATP, another thing it can do is actually repackage it into fats inside the cell. This is called intracellular fat. And it can convert to things like diacylglycerol, DAGs, or ceramides, which are these toxic fats that mm-hmm. fill up inside the cell. And what's so fun to think about in terms of our biology is that, like, again, our life is really just like the bubbling up of these chemical reactions happening inside of cells, cell signaling pathways constantly happening inside our cells. And if a cell is filled with fat, it literally is not going to be able to do a lot of that stuff inside the cell as well, like cell signaling, like transmitting messages through the cell. And so once excess glucose is being stored also as intracellular fats, it's a really big problem for well-functioning cells, because there's literally like a physical biologic block inside that. That's how I think about it, inside the cell preventing normal activities. Again, if you think of the cell as like a city where things are being transported all around it and recycled and moved around, and there's vesicles moving proteins around and the DNA is replicating, we need a clean internal cell environment, not, you know, filled with toxic fats like that. So again, all of it boils down to, again, the mitochondria, because when we free it up to do its best work, all of this is running smoothly and kind of melts away and lifts.
Yeah. I think if it's one mission that we share, we're going to make sure every single person in the world knows what the mitochondria are and doesn't have a PTSD association from biology class with it, that understands how crucial this is and how upstream it is from every other phenomenon within the human body. Mm-hmm. It's so amazing. And maybe just to wrap up here in this first episode, just to get back to kind of the wonder and awe of science, right? And what's happening here is, of course, like the byproducts of that energy production process are water and carbon dioxide, right? Yeah. And of course, those are the two substrates that exactly the ones that plants need in order to generate the chemical energy, to take that energy and into the chloroplast with the photons from the sun to actually generate the glucose and the other macros at the plant level in the first place. And this is like the most incredible piece of it, that we co-evolved this way. And, you know, there's all these amazing cycles, you know, this one, the carbon cycle, but there's so many other amazing ones. And so thank you. Yeah, you've done such an exemplary job of helping me understand how we make energy in the human body. And we are going to talk in future episodes about how that is optimized and where it can go off the rails. Yeah. So thanks, Case.
Thanks.
Thank you for listening to my conversation with Dr. Casey Means. Be sure to tune in to future episodes of this Good Energy series for more inspiration to look and feel your best. And if you're interested in learning about the protocols and benefits of practices like fasting, cold and heat therapy, light therapy, resistance training, and meditation, well, check out my new commune course titled Good Stress. I flipped the script on stress. Now, in this program, I distill all of the conversations I've had here on the podcast into 10 specific protocols that help me lose 50 pounds, reverse my prediabetes, and create an upward health spiral in my life. It's not just downward spirals. Upward spirals are possible too. So you can get the first 5 days for free at onecommune.com/goodstress. Okay. You can always email me directly at any time at jeffk@onecommune.com. And I'd really like to express gratitude to the folks that make this show possible week over week, including Jacob Lau, Megan Stone, Violet Augustine, Cooper Mall, Silvana Alcala, Wellington Gonzalez, and Ryan Tillotson. What a team. That's all from the commune for today. My name is Jeff Krasnow, and I am here for you.